It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Breaking news out of Iran today. At the funeral for the general who was killed in that drone strike last week, a massive turnout, and then some sort of stampede happened, and Iranian state TV is now reporting at least 32 people are dead, trampled in that stampede at the funeral. The numbers of dead have been fluctuating throughout the hour, and we're going to continue to keep an eye on developments there. But crowds have been huge both today and yesterday at the funeral and the procession for General Soleimani, with estimates of a million or more people filling the streets there, the mourning accompanied by angry rhetoric, including threats to set U.S. facilities on fire, chants of death to Israel, and a vote by Iran's parliament to officially designate the U.S. military a terrorist force after the targeted killing of the former leader of Iran's Revolutionary Guard, blamed by the U.S. for killing and maiming hundreds of U.S. troops and thousands of others. Of course, President Trump has promised a swift and overwhelming response if Iran tries to retaliate, and the hurt could be delivered in part by one of the U.S. military's newest weapons. You mentioned them, the F-35A2 Lightning fighter jets, 52 of them, making a dramatic elephant walk takeoff from the Hill Air Force Base in Utah, rocketing into the sky one after another, fully armed and ready for battle. I've seen these jets up close, guys. They are very, very impressive. There's a squadron of F-35s from Utah that has now been deployed here in the Middle East. We can also tell you this morning there is now a fresh warning from the U.S. for ships in Mideast waterways to be on the lookout for the possibility of attack from Iranians on U.S. Merchant ships in Mideast waterways.
All right, that was Rick Leventhal this morning on Fox and Friends. Sandy Rios with you. This is an important day in the sense that this is the third day after the killing of Soleimani. And so his funeral is over as of, you know, they're like, 10 hours ahead of us, maybe something like that, maybe 8. And so the funeral is over and the 3 days of mourning are past. And so we are all watching to see what Iran is going to do in response. Rick Leventhal mentioned those F-35s. You know, they are brand new planes. They have incredible capabilities. They carry more weaponry. They have more range. They are smarter. You know what I mean by that? Technologically smarter, capable of seeing and intercepting. And so there was a display of force yesterday out of Utah, and the number 52 of these F-35s, you know, is significant because there were 52 American hostages held by Iran in the American embassy in Tehran in 1979. They were held for almost 2 years. It was a horrible, horrible story. President Jimmy Carter did nothing. He was weak, much like what you hear from the left now. Oh, we can't strike out because, you know, I'm not saying that Jimmy Carter said this. I'm talking about their overall viewpoint. Oh, we can't push back because then they'll do something else and they might hurt us. And so, you know, we'll, you know, send them $1.5 billion in cash or $150 billion in other ways. And, you know, we'll just kind of keep paying them off and buying time, which is what we've been doing since 1979. Except Ronald Reagan came into power and changed it for a short time, but not since Reagan has anyone done anything to push back on Iran. It's been Iran calling the shots, doing their dirty deeds around the globe, and America responding, never doing anything on the offense, always doing stuff on the defense. And so things have changed, and now, you know, the retaliation for taking out Soleimani is going to be taking place soon, and we just don't know where it's going to strike. Now, the other part that I want you to know, there are a lot of things I want you to know. In Iran, where the million plus people, millions, I'm not, nobody really knows, they show an aerial view of it. There were lots of people there, let me just say, jam-packed, and they traveled long distance. And you heard Rick say that, according to what I read, was at least 35 were killed and 48 were injured. But who knows? You know, how could we possibly have the exact count? But the Iran, which is really a police state now, it really is, you know, under Soleimani, who was just killed, they rounded up 1,500 dissidents and killed them. We know how Iranian prisoners are treated. We haven't talked too much about it the last several years, but we know that they are a brutal regime. And we know that there was a democratic uprising that Barack Obama just ignored. Remember that? They were out in the streets for days. They wanted to be free. And so, but Barack Obama did nothing to help them. And so many of them were killed, imprisoned. And all of this, Soleimani's been in charge. He's been the terrorist. You know, he's got a great title. He's the head of the Quds Force. Quds means, by the way, Jerusalem, because their goal, of course, is to destroy Israel. And so he's been in charge since 1998. We believe he was very involved in helping the attackers, our attackers, on the United States in 9/11. And there are so many things I can't recite them in this moment. So the regime, as I understand it, and again, no way to quantify here, but they forced people to come out. I'm sure not all of those people were forced out. The Iranians are divided. But they forced many, many people to come out on the streets and profess mourning for Soleimani. And so Nikki Haley had a really, former UN Ambassador Nikki Haley, had an interesting observation last night. Let's hear it.
You don't see anyone standing up for Iran. You're not hearing any of the Gulf members. You're not hearing China. You're not hearing Russia. The only ones that are mourning the loss of Soleimani are our Democrat leadership and our Democrat presidential candidates. No one else in the world, because they knew that this man had evil veins. They knew what he was capable of, and they saw the destruction and the lives lost based from his hands. We need to be completely behind the president, what he did, because every one of those countries are watching our news media right now, seeing what everyone's saying. And this is a moment of strength for the United States. It's a moment of strength for President Trump.
Well, most definitely, Nikki's right about that. But, of course, she's also right. She's right about the last part, that this is a day of that President Trump should be satisfied and gratified at the action he's taken. This is the day when Americans should be very grateful. And I think polls are showing that Americans, by and large, are. But the Democratic left are not. And Nikki was right about that, too. And just to illustrate it, here's a montage of what if Iranian, secret agents, whatever you call them, the Quds Force or Russians or you fill in the blank, whatever country are watching our news media, which they are. She's right about that. This is what they hear.
He was a war hero, the commander of Iran's feared Quds Force.
Qasem Soleimani was no ordinary general. The U.S. officially classified him as a terrorist, but in Iran, he was a national hero.
He's regarded as personally incredibly brave. The troops love him.
I was trying to think of somebody, and I was thinking of De Gaulle.
A revered figure in Iran and some other places in the Middle East.
Smart, charismatic, ruthless, strategic, and bold. His power made Iranians proud.
But even many of Soleimani's enemies admitted he was a military genius.
Qasem Soleimani was an evil genius.
Soleimani was in charge of spreading Iranian influence around the world, and he was extremely good at it.
He is the, think of the French Foreign Legion, you know, if you will.
By killing Qasem Soleimani, the U.S. has stripped Iran of an inspirational military leader.
The crowds are massive and emotional. There are many tears here.
Thousands of mourners on the streets in Iran. Symbolic caskets aloft, weeping and chanting, I am Soleimani.
The supreme leader of Iran weeping and praying over a coffin draped in the Iraqi flag.
It's difficult to convey how revered he is.
There was talk in Iran Soleimani might be a future president or perhaps even a supreme leader.
All right, so there you go. If you're, this is what your neighbors and friends are hearing. We knew that this was going to happen. The day after the strike, or the first day Monday, when we talked about this, I told you they would try to figure out what their message was going to be. So they're praising Soleimani as some great general, some great leader. Well, Hitler was a great leader. Hitler was a great general. I mean, he led Germany to glory in some ways, didn't he? But then infamy. And so we have the same thing with Soleimani. He was a murderous, horrible person. I was hearing some of the some of the things that he did to people. They would go after families who were dissidents. They actually they drilled holes in the legs of a little child to punish his parents. That's the kind of things, and overseen by Soleimani, that's the kind of wickedness that he was into, in a micro story and then also just in across the globe. And most of it was aimed toward the United States. Of course, we are the great Satan. They've been at war with us for 30 years, or at least since 1979. They consider us their enemy. They chant in their assemblies, you know, death to America. This is not new. It's been happening for decades. And yet we go on and we give them money and we act as though somehow we can reach some agreement with this country that hates us and has declared war against us. So that reminds me then, Nikki Haley made the point that Democrats are praising Soleimani and, of course, criticizing the president. Can you believe that? They're aligning themselves with Iran, our enemy. They hate the president so much that they are willing to put themselves, they don't even understand, obviously, the risk that the Iranians don't love them either. They don't love Hollywood. Are you kidding me? That represents the decadence that they claim to hate the most. While they do their evil, they are particularly righteous about immoral behavior. It's a twisted worldview that Muhammad gave the world through the Quran. There's no question about that. And through his own practices, you know, Muhammad was a pedophile. He married a girl, I think it was 9 years old. It's just sick. It's a sick story in every single way. And so their confusion and their confusion, maybe that's too kind a word, their delusion and their rabid hatred of anything non-Muslim was set in motion by, and it's just been developed and gotten more complicated in the ensuing centuries. Okay, so back to Democrats. Elizabeth Warren over the weekend, I was going to play this for you. I'm not sure that I will, but let me just say that she's accusing President Trump of taking out Soleimani because he wants to distract from impeachment. She talked to Jake Tapper on CNN about that. That's the only reason. It wasn't that bad. There was nothing imminent. It's just that he wants to, you know, get everyone's mind off of impeachment. Bernie Sanders went a step further last night. He compared President Trump killing Soleimani to Russian President Vladimir Putin assassinating dissidents. So let me read what he said exactly. This guy, you know, was as bad as he was an official of the Iranian government. And you unleash then, if China does that, you know, if Russia does that, you know, Russia has been implicated under Putin with assassinating dissidents. So in Bernie Sanders' mind, our killing of Soleimani, who has been, if he wasn't planning something imminent, which I'm sure he was, they wouldn't have claimed it. You know, with the scrutiny that they're under right now, the administration, do you think they're going to fabricate some notion that there was an imminent threat? Really? You think they have confidence that someone's not going to come out and, you know, I don't know, tell a different story because they hate the president so much? They are surrounded by people they can't trust. So I sort of think the story's true just on that alone. But Soleimani has done plenty of things through the decades that would warrant us taking him out. And we've already described those. At least, 700 Americans have lost their lives. So many others had these Iranian-sponsored and bought IEDs that maimed them. You see their pictures all the time with wounded warriors. That's a direct result of the wickedness of Soleimani, who wanted to injure and kill American soldiers. While we were in a war in Iraq, it was the Iranians who were our greatest enemies. I have a lot more to say about this. In fact, Annie McCarthy has a great article talking about legally and strategically why the president had every right to take out Soleimani. And we'll come back to that. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Here is some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for health insurance, or if you sign up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare. It's the affordable alternative to health insurance. And it's worked beautifully for 25 years. They have more than 400,000 members now around the country. MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry. And over the years, members have shared over $3 billion of each other's medical bills. So they could help share your needs too. And best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is about $500 a month. Your savings could be more or less, but think about what you could do with that extra money every month. You're not stuck with a high-cost health plan. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. Here's the number to find out more, and there's no pressure. They are super easy to talk to. Call 833-44-BIBLE. That's 833-44-BIBLE, 833-44-BIBLE.
The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. Such comfort. And yet, can you imagine having never read those words for yourself? Hi, it's Michael Woolworth with Bible League International, and we've been engaging the world with God's Word for more than 80 years for $5 a Bible. You know, there are Christians in Asia, Africa, Europe, Latin America, and the Middle East who've never held a Bible in their own hands because of corrupt governments that oppress, majority religions that persecute, and other conditions related to living remotely and in extreme poverty. Some of these new believers, they memorize long stretches of Scripture, while others cherish the Word they heard preached on Sunday until they can gather again. They long for God's Word to hold in their hands and to cherish in their hearts as they grow in His grace and knowledge. Details on how you can be involved are at sendbiblesnow.com. That's sendbiblesnow.com or by calling Bible League at 800-YES-WORD, 800-YES-WORD.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
What do you see for the next generation? Do you see a prospering nation? Do you see hope? The future is ours to create, and Liberty University is driven to train positive influencers for our country and our culture. Our mission is to guide students toward leadership as servants of the people, defenders of freedom, and champions of truth. Discover how you can impact the next generation of Champions for Christ by texting GIVE to 839-858.
Golden Globe host Ricky Gervais deserves the Presidential Medal of Freedom, folks, after he called out Hollywood's most famous virtue signalers for being a bunch of drunks, criminals, deviants, and high school dropouts.
If you do win an award tonight, don't use it as a platform to make a political speech, right? You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world.
As you might imagine, the crowd was stunned, and so was I. It's not every day someone puts the Hollywood crowd in their place. Mr. Gervais said what needed to be said, folks. He spoke on behalf of a grateful nation. Well done, sir. Years from now, when they're teaching a class on how to speak truth to power, let's hope the professor shows the class the opening monologue of the 2020 Golden Globe Awards. I posted the entire monologue on my website, toddstarnes.com.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Called the U.S. attack that killed Qasem Soleimani a, quote, assassination. President Ford issued an executive order in 76 to make political assassinations illegal. Are you saying that this strike was a violation of law?
Look, it was a targeted attack on a government official, a high-ranking military official for the government of Iran. And what it's done has moved this country closer to war. We are not safer today than we were before Donald Trump acted. I think the question that we ought to focus on is why now? You know, why not a month ago? Why not a month from now? And the answer from the administration seems to be they can't keep their story straight on this. They pointed in all different directions. And you know, the last time we watched them do this was this summer over Ukraine. As soon as people started asking about the conversation between Donald Trump and the president of Ukraine and why aid had been held up to Ukraine, the administration did the same thing. They pointed in all directions about what was going on. And of course, what emerged then is this was Donald Trump just trying to advance Donald Trump's own political agenda, not the agenda of the United States of America. So what happens right now? Next week, the president of the United States could be facing an impeachment trial in the Senate. We know he's deeply upset about that. And I think people are reasonably asking, why this moment? Why does he pick now
to take this highly inflammatory, highly dangerous action that moves us closer to war.
Elizabeth Warren, the esteemed Democratic candidate for president, you know, it's hard to hear her say that anyone cannot keep their stories straight, because if anyone should have trouble keeping their story straight, is Elizabeth Warren. She is the consummate liar. At least she has comprehension of the notion that you need to keep your story straight, and maybe she needs to work on her own skills with that. But of course, she declares that we're not safer. I mean, first of all, there's no way she could know that. There was absolutely no way she could know that we are not safer. Anyone that follows the Middle East and the Islamic mindset knows that they only respond to power. That's it. Yeah, you can buy them. Actually, I think when it appears to me that in this modern iteration of Islam, when you respond in strength, they get scared. They do retreat. They love to talk. They boast. We're the best. We are the rainy, whatever, the fill-in-the-blank people. You know, we will conquer you. We will destroy you. We will whatever. They do that handily when they're not really challenged. But when they're challenged, they seem to, I think, be a bit cowardly. They go after people that are helpless. Boko Haram in Nigeria just beheaded a bride and her wedding party on their way to the wedding. This is the kind of thing they seem to love to do, is, you know, slaughter innocent people that can't fight back. Nevertheless, we don't know that we're not safer. And I think we inevitably, American lives were going to be taken, as they have been being taken for the last decade, since 1979, by the Iranians. That's not going to stop. So American lives are going to be lost if nothing happened to Soleimani. And so the question is now, what happens with Iran? We have crippled them economically with the sanctions. We have managed to, because there are so many brave people within Iran who want to be free and do not align themselves with the mullahs. They experienced a secular Iran back in the under the Shah of Iran. They used to dress Western dress. Women had lots of privileges. There's a strain of Iranians who remember that, and they know what it's like to be free. Many of them have been here, and they've been fighting a hard fight and imprisoned and killed many of them. So the dissension in the country, you can't even imagine the joy with which they received, that faction, however large or small they are in Iran, the news of Soleimani's death. And so there's trouble in Iran, and the mullahs are in trouble. Their wealth has been drained, at least to some extent. And so we've put the squeeze on them pretty handily. So for Elizabeth Warren to say we're not safer, that's a foolish thing to say. I can't say we are or we aren't, but I don't think we are. It is a given that more Americans would be killed by Iranians because they've been doing that for decades. All right, so then we have Sanders, who I said before the break is comparing killing Soleimani to Russian President Vladimir Putin assassinating dissidents. Are you kidding me? I mean, do I even need to explain that? It is just ridiculous. And of course, Bernie Sanders, the communist, would think of reasons. He's at least open about it. You remember he took his honeymoon in Moscow when no Americans could not go to Moscow, but somehow Bernie got permission to go to Moscow and have his honeymoon. He's a real champion of communist regimes and has been for a long time. And yet, you know, he's way up in the polls in the Democratic primary. Isn't that something? The dark humor part of me almost laughs. I can't believe that. And by the way, I just want to, before I go on about the whole assassination thing, I just came across this. Actress Rose McGowan tweeted last Friday, "Dear at Iran, hashtag Iran, the USA has disrespected your country, your flag, your people. 52% of us humbly apologize. We want peace with your nation. We are being held hostage by a terrorist regime. We do not know how to escape. Please do not kill us." Okay, thank you, Rose, for such bravery and ignorance displayed all in one tweet. So that's Rose McGowan. All right, so back to the whole issue of whether President Trump was justified legally in taking out Soleimani. Andy McCarthy, of course, who was the prosecutor of the blind First World Trade Center bombing and the blind sheikh, actually a very good friend, has written a great article on this. And Andy's trusted really on all sides. He is. He just speaks the truth. And this is what he said. If a war be made by invasion of a foreign nation, The president is not only authorized but bound to resist force by force. He does not initiate the war, but is bound to accept the challenge without waiting for any special legislative authority. This is Andy now. So said the Supreme Court in the Civil War era prize cases more than 150 years ago. It has been the law of the United States as long as there has been a United States. It reflects the venerable law of nations derived from natural law and long preexisting our republic. When there are forcible threats to the United States, the president has not merely the power but the obligation to repel them. In large measure, that is why there is an office for the president. The framers grasp in a time of dire peril to the fledgling nation that national security cannot be achieved by committee. A single chief executive, the president, was necessary to marshal the might of the nation with dispatch when America was under siege. And then he goes on to say that Soleimani and the al-Muhandis were in the act of making war on the United States, not just plotting it, though there was plenty of that going on too. In late 2019, the Hezbollah brigades, and that's a satellite or a sister or backed by the Iranians, the Hezbollah brigades backed by Soleimani carried out repeated attacks on U.S. coalition forces in Iraq. Now, this is 2019. We're not even talking about the Iraq war. There were, in late 2019, 11 attacks on bases housing U.S. military personnel in just the last 2 months. As the Defense Department has recounted, these included a 30-plus rocket attack on an Iraqi base near Kirkuk that resulted in the death of a U.S. citizen and injured four U.S. service members, as well as members of the Iraqi security forces. In response, American forces carried out missile strikes against Hezbollah brigades' targets in Iraq and Syria. After vowing revenge, the jihadist militias stormed the U.S. embassy in Baghdad. They wanted to replicate what they did in 1979 when they took those 52 hostages and held them for almost 2 years. They did not get inside, but they did tremendous damage, shouting death to America. So that little plot was foiled. But they left graffiti on the walls. This is just last week, bragging about the participation of Soleimani and the, quote, Popular Mobilization Commission, end quote. President Trump warned on Twitter that Iran would be held accountable and would, quote, pay a very big price, end quote. Iran's supreme leader, quote, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, scoffed and replied, you can't do anything. This is last week. This is last week. So let me repeat this. The Iraqi forces that were working for Soleimani and Iran, called the Popular Mobilization Commission, stormed our embassy. You saw that. By the way, the Iraqi soldiers let them through the checkpoints. They go inside. They cannot get inside. The Marines stood fast, and our people, hundreds of people that are working at the embassy, were not harmed. Thank God. But they could have been harmed. They could have been killed. They could have been taken hostage. They could have been tortured. They could have been beheaded. They could have. You fill in the blank. And so the president warned them. You're going to be held accountable and you're going to pay a very big price. The supreme leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, scoffed and replied, you can't do anything. So the president did something. He did a very big something. And Iran and its leaders are back on their heels trying to figure out how to now come after us. And by the way, Andy goes back to say, an attack on another nation's embassy is by itself an act of war. Our government estimates that Soleimani was responsible for the killing of more than 600 U.S. troops during the fighting in Iraq. The inconvenient fact is that the revolutionary jihadist regime in Iran has considered itself at war with the United States for 40 years and has prosecuted it throughout those 40 years. Usually it is a low thrum affair, but there are sometimes major strikes, such as the 1996 Khobar Towers attack in Saudi Arabia, in which 19 U.S. airmen were killed. Most infamously, Iran is the world's leading sponsor of anti-American terrorism. Without Tehran's support, al-Qaeda could not have evolved into the threat it became on 9/11. Soleimani was not assassinated. He was an enemy combatant commander who became a combat casualty because of a righteous, responsive strike conducted while he was in the act of levying war by directing its forces. And then Andy goes on to talk about how the weakness of prior leaders and how they thought if they just paid them off and they would bribe them with millions and billions of dollars, which is what Obama did. It's what the others did in the past. It doesn't work. And he ends by saying President Trump's strategy is to remove the enemy's most effective military asset, who will not be easily replaceable. To demonstrate to the mullahs what can happen when resolve backs our exponentially superior capabilities, and to continue squeezing the regime with punishing economic sanctions as it is pressured by the increasingly restive Iranian people. Peace through strength is a better plan. And, of course, peace through strength is that phrase coined by Ronald Reagan. And he was right then, and he is right now. I want to put this article on our Facebook page, Targeting Soleimani, the one by Andy McCarthy, because it's so good. And if you doubt, you know, if this is true or not, the former Homeland Security Secretary under Barack Obama was on Meet the Press on Sunday, and this is what he had to say, Jay Johnson.
Before you were Homeland Security Secretary, you were counselor at the Defense Department. So explain for viewers, why does Mike Pompeo keep saying terrorist? There is a legal reason he keeps saying the word terrorist, isn't it?
No, not necessarily.
Okay.
If you believe everything that our government is saying about General Soleimani, he was a lawful military objective. Mm-hmm. And the president, under his constitutional authority as commander-in-chief, had ample domestic legal authority to take him out without an additional congressional authorization. Whether he was a terrorist or a general in a military force that was engaged in armed attacks against our people, he was a lawful military objective.
All right, Jay Johnson, I want to give you just a few different stories surrounding this that are just interesting. You may have heard or may not, but I want you to hear. Colin Kaepernick tweeted after this attack, "America has always sanctioned and besieged black and brown bodies, both at home and abroad. America militarism is the weapon wielded by American imperialism to enforce its police and plundering of the non-white world." Someone responded to that tweet by saying Soleimani was responsible for killing more brown people, especially Muslims, than almost any human being on the planet. Great work, Nike. Blank of a spokesperson you have there. I thought that put it perfectly. Selective Service website crashed because college students who had applied for loans got bad information. Somebody started circulating on the web that because they have to answer a question for the potential draft, they were all going to be drafted. And so the website crashed just hours after the announcement about the killing of Soleimani. And it reminded me in reading this that a federal judge in February of 2019 ruled that an all-male draft was unconstitutional. By the way, we don't have a draft right now, and there's no worry. I guess I should have said that. I wish we did have a draft, to be honest with you, but we don't. It's an all-volunteer force. And so this federal judge in February of 2019 ruled that an all-male draft was unconstitutional, saying historical restrictions on women in the military may have justified past discrimination, but men and women now have many similar roles. That begs the question, you know, if something should happen, does this mean, now that's a federal judge, it didn't go to the Supreme Court, does that mean all of our girls are going to be drafted as well? And if that should happen, if there should have to be a draft, if the whole all hell should break loose and we have to go into a war, does that mean half of our force is going to be female? And what does that do to our capabilities, I ask you? I'm girls, sorry, but you have a 40% less upper body strength. It's just, it doesn't work. You are not equipped by God to go into combat. And so that's just something to consider. A Washington Post reporter posted a picture of the Iranians mourning Soleimani with a picture of Americans at the inauguration of President Trump. And she thought that was funny because they were kind of similar crowds. And then there's a little backlash against her for doing that. But you can see where she's coming from. Customs and Border Patrol is having to deny a viral news report that it's been ordered to detain Iranians. And then, of course, they came out and saying, oh, no, we have not. We're not doing that. I guess I kind of wish they were. Yeah, there's a lot of good Iranians, but there are times for caution and questions need to be asked. There's nothing wrong with that. But they're promising us they're not asking those questions. Iranians can still come into the country, no questions asked. I don't know. I think that's comforting. All right. I'm going to take a break. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The fear of the Lord is hatred of evil. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. 207 members of Congress have signed an amicus brief urging the U.S. Supreme Court to revisit its Roe v. Wade opinion. The brief was filed in conjunction with Americans United for Life in a case pending before the court challenging a Louisiana law that requires a doctor to have admitting privileges at a hospital within 30 miles of the facility where an abortion is performed. Justice Clarence Thomas has already gone on record indicating his willingness to revisit Roe. He said, "When faced with a demonstrably erroneous precedent, my rule is simple. We should not follow it." Justice Thomas is right.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Have you been looking for a way to serve others? Are you able to serve in a ministry without being paid? You and Friendships might be the perfect match. Friendships is currently taking applications for volunteers providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished, both here at home and around the world. Get more information at friendships.org or by calling 337-433-5022.
Folks, you know, I used to be a football fan. I stopped being a football fan. I could not stand the idea of people denigrating that flag and refusing to stand for it. My attitude about folks like that is, please leave. You ought to be thanking God every day of your life that you were born an American. I know that my country's not perfect, but I still love America.
Tune in to The Awakening, weekdays at noon Central on American Family Radio.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. When the nation of Israel faced off against its sworn enemy, the Philistines, the issue was settled when David took down one man. The inspirational leader of the Philistine people was Goliath, their most renowned warrior and a national hero. Instead of waging conventional war, David settled things for the moment when he hit Goliath in the head with a rock. The Philistines scattered, the war was over for the moment, and thousands of lives were saved from death on the battlefield. The killing of Iran's General Soleimani may not have exactly the same effect in our battle with Iran, an enemy that is determined to destroy us, but it has certainly deprived Iran of an iconic and very effective military leader. Lives will be saved, and the president is to be praised for neutralizing a threat who has been on our terror threat list for many, many years.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The day after President Trump eliminated Qasem Soleimani, the world's most dangerous terrorist, China announced that it was putting an official with a self-described record of, quote, cleaning up the political ecology, unquote, on the mainland in charge of its operations in Hong Kong. Luo Wenning's installation seemed sudden, perhaps to exploit the United States' preoccupation with the aftermath of Soleimani's killing. Whatever its motivation, entrusting the Hong Kong portfolio at this sensitive time to someone with no background in the territory, but a record as a thuggish enforcer of Xi Jinping's diktats, is ominous. While we are understandably focused at last on the fact that Iran is at war with our country, and has been for four decades especially, the 22 years Soleimani ran Tehran's jihadist operations, we must be prepared to hold China accountable should it crack down on Hong Kong. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Okay, Sandy Rios back with you. Just to change the subject for a minute, AFA is holding some action town hall meetings in 2020. And they're coming, you know, to areas near you. So let me just say, Wesley Wildman will be hosting them. Wes, of course, is the Vice President of Outreach for the American Family Association. Walker Wildman, Rob Chambers, and Abraham Hamilton will be speakers for that event. They're going to be delivering different topics, but it'll be, you know, it will be something that you will want to come to, and it'll give you a way to connect with AFA in a personal way, put a face to a voice. Let me just give you the dates, and we'll put this on our Facebook page because people, I don't expect you to remember, but I will tell you so that you can tickle your ears and you can figure out if you're near any of them. On Thursday, January the 16th in Dubuque, Iowa is the first one. February 20th in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Flagstaff, Arizona. Thursday, April the 2nd in Gainesville, Florida. April 23rd. So those are the dates of the AFA Action, American Family Association Action Town Hall meetings. And I hope that you'll go to our Facebook page and kind of, or go to AFA.net and you can find out those dates too. But I hope that you'll come in droves and meet the people that are behind the workings of the American Family Association. All right, something really funny. We could use a laugh, couldn't we? Because this is funny to me. Do you remember when these Russian pranksters who do this YouTube show, they call themselves Volvan and Lexus. Okay, I got to tell this without giggling. Okay, so you remember when they pranked Adam Schiff and they told him that they had like naked pictures of Donald Trump? Do you remember that? I think we played the audio of that because Adam Schiff was so excited. Well, yeah, well, Lisa, you need to get those to me. Yes, I'd be very interested. Yes, of course. Well, they have now pranked Maxine Waters. And so basically the setup is that Maxine Waters thinks, well, it's Greta Thunberg on the phone, Greta and her father. So those are the two people that are calling, but they're really Vladimir Kuznetsov and Alexei Stoliarov, and they have a female colleague who helps them who does Greta. So they call up, and it kind of, well, one of the things they want to do, they're trying to fight for the environmental concerns of an imaginary island that they call Chunga Changa. So that, among other things, and so here's just a little taste of it. Let's listen.
Congresswoman?
Yeah.
I have Greta and her father, Svante, on the line.
Thank you very much.
Congresswoman, this is Svante, Greta's father, and here's Greta.
Yes.
Hello, Congresswoman Waters. Hello, I'm very happy to talk to you.
Well, thank you both for calling me, and I'm very anxious to hear from you.
We have a wonderful climate strike to support the ecology of Chunga Changa Island.
So we are in a climate strike here in a meeting.
Okay. So you're in the meeting now? The meeting has started?
Yes, already.
Yes. We're here now at the meeting. And if you will allow me, I will put you on a speakerphone.
Hello, everybody. This is Congresswoman Maxine Waters. And I am so pleased to be on this telephone call with Greta Thunberg. And I'm very pleased that she's with you in North Carolina, where you're focusing on protecting the very important island of Chula Change.
I'm sorry. I just think that's so funny. She's congratulating them for protecting the environment of Chunga Changa. But it's more than that. So Greta actually tells Maxine Waters that she met Trump at the United Nations and he privately insulted her, and she cried. So Maxine gets all upset about that. He said you will never achieve your goals. Oh my goodness! Oh my goodness! Did you cry? And then they tell her that he not only told. Trump not only told Greta that she would never achieve her goals, he told Greta that he did pressure the Ukrainian president to investigate his political rivals. And so then they promise they have a tape, and she wants to meet them, have them come to Washington. And if the public knew this, Maxine, if the public knew that he talked to Greta like that, he made her cry and told her she would never achieve, this will go against him too, she adds. Then she wants to know what day you can come, and they go on and on. And so that's the pranksters, Vladimir Kuznetsov and Alexei Stoliarov, and they are known as Volvan and Lexus on YouTube. So I just think it's funny, and you know. So Maxine, of course, has been one of the leaders of the impeachment effort. She's been trying to impeach the president since the very beginning, since he was sworn in. She's been very hateful, actually, and she's the one who said that people like us who support President Trump should never be left alone. We should be harassed in public at restaurants. We don't have a right to be anywhere. So it's really not funny, but it makes it really funny that they pranked her the way that they did. Now, what's happening with impeachment? We do need to talk about that. It's been 20 days or 21 days now, maybe, since the impeachment in the House, since they had their two impeachment articles and they were supposed to, by a statute, turn them right over to the Senate in due course. So that, now again, think of an indictment and a trial. It kind of gives you a basic framework, although there are not complete correlations there. The Senate, the senators are not jurors in the sense that they are, this is a political process and they are allowed to be political. It is political. And so for them to express their viewpoint or talk about it publicly, it's not the same thing as jurors. So that's the difference. But still, a process is that the House brings the indictment like a grand jury would, and then the Senate is the one that holds the trial. So imagine if you had been indicted by a grand jury, and then the lead prosecutor of that procedure did not let it go to trial. So you're just indicted the rest of your life, but never any satisfaction, never any day in court. That's what Nancy Pelosi is trying to do. It really is outrageous. So Josh Hawley, Senator Josh Hawley from Missouri, has proposed a solution, and I'll let him explain it to you. This is clip 11.
Nancy Pelosi is attempting to obstruct a Senate trial. That's all there is to it. The Constitution says that the Senate is the one that will have the trial. It says the trial will follow the impeachment. Now she's trying to prevent a Senate trial. She's trying to obstruct it. She's trying to upend the Constitution. So here's what I think needs to happen. We need to change the Senate rules to allow the Senate to dismiss this case if she refuses to send the articles over. In a normal courtroom, in a real world, if the prosecutor does not try his or her case, if they don't actually bring it forward to the court, then the defendant can say, all right, well, then we're dismissing the case. The court can say we're dismissing the case. In this instance, the Senate is the court, and it's time for us to take action to say, if you're not going to prosecute your case, we're throwing it out. We've got to change the Senate rules to allow the Senate to proceed. Listen, Nancy Pelosi is trying to run the Senate. She is trying to be the leader of the Senate and control what we do. She is trying to prevent a trial. And the bottom line is that's not what the Constitution says. So in order to protect the Constitution, in order to protect the American people and to give the president due process, the Senate has to act. We've got to say, send us these articles or we're moving on without you.
Yes, I say that's Senator Josh Hawley. Now, here's just the other wrinkle in this. Senator Lindsey Graham and also Mitch McConnell, what they're saying is different. They're saying that let's have the trial. We'll have the trial. The articles won't be sent over. We'll just have a trial. I don't think they'll listen to Josh Hawley. I'm just saying. Hawley has been really outspoken. He's been very courageous. I have a lot of admiration for him. But Mitch McConnell is not going to let, he's not going to let anyone tell him what to do. I don't think he would. I think this is a great idea, but I don't think it's going to go anywhere. I think maybe, hopefully, Lindsey Graham will have his way and they'll have some sort of a gaveled in trial. But the problem with the trial is, does anybody remember what happened with the hearing on the last Supreme Court justice? Do you remember how out of control that got? The left, because they are lawless right now, could turn whatever the Senate does into an absolute circus. And I think that's what many people just don't trust them, that it wouldn't be a fair process where they were really trying to follow procedure and do what was right, but that they want to create some kind of a show out of it. And so that's why I think Josh Hawley's idea is the best, personally. Now, there was a wrinkle that happened yesterday, and in fact, John Roberts talked about it. Let's play clip six and let John tell them.
The escalating confrontation with Iran pushed impeachment to the back burner. That is, until the president's former national security advisor, John Bolton, came forward today to announce he would be willing to testify in the Senate trial. In a statement, Bolton saying, "I have had to resolve the serious competing issues as best I could, based on careful consideration and study. I have concluded that if the Senate issues a subpoena for my testimony, I am prepared to testify." Bolton's offer has given new ammunition to Senator Chuck Schumer for an upfront agreement to allow witnesses at the pending Senate trial. Schumer suggesting that if Bolton, as he says, has new and relevant information to share, to deny his appearance would be to participate in a cover-up.
So that's really interesting. I mean, if you've listened to me for a long time, you know that I know Ambassador Bolton. I'm not, you know, since he went into the White House, I have not spoken to him. So I don't have any knowledge about this. He doesn't confide in me. I'm not claiming that. He's just someone that I have a, a business friendship with. But I don't know what this means. I have to tell you, I don't know what this means. I know that Ambassador Bolton was pretty upset about leaving the White House, and that he and President Trump had a rift. So I don't know. It could go either way. He may be like still upset, wanting to justify his own leaving and, you know, say what he knows about the president. He's not going to lie about it. On the other hand, this could be his way of silencing the left, because John is a patriot. He loves this country. And I'm sure that he's very happy. I know he is about the taking out of Soleimani, and understands how the left, what a nightmare it will be if the left takes power in this country. So I can't imagine that he would try to take out this president. I can't imagine it personally, but we'll see. So if they go ahead with a trial, of course, that doesn't mean he's going to be called. They have to at least call a trial. This is going to have to unfold. But his announcement that he would testify is certainly an interesting wrinkle. Another interesting story on this count, Devin Nunes was interviewed by Sarah Carter. And this is a story that I had not heard. Let's see if I can tell this as quickly and clearly as I can. The IG who brought the whistleblower forward, Eric Sciaramella, again, Sciaramella is his name. The IG that allowed him to come forward was Michael Atkinson. Now, the problem is that Eric Sciaramella, and I'm naming him because that is the whistleblower, didn't have any direct evidence. He said someone told him. It was very odd. And let me just read to you what Nunes said to Sarah. This is Sarah's words here. Nunes revealed that transcripts of Atkinson's, that's Inspector General Atkinson's, secret testimony to the House, because the House, Jim Jordan and Devin Nunes and Kevin McCarthy asked him to come before them and tell them why he allowed this whistleblower to file a legitimate complaint when he had no firsthand knowledge whatsoever. It was hearsay. So he came before them and testified, and Adam Schiff has not allowed that transcript to be released. This is kind of the silent mystery piece. So that, let me go back to this now. He revealed, meaning Nunes, that transcripts of Atkinson's secret testimony will expose that the inspector general either lied or he needs to make corrections to his statements to lawmakers. The transcripts had been kept from the public by House Intelligence Committee Chairman Schiff because it's damaging to their impeachment scam, says Nunes. The whistleblower, who has not been formally named by lawmakers, met with Schiff's staff prior to submitting their complaint to Atkinson. Schiff was chided by Republican lawmakers and many members of the media for falsely claiming that his committee had no contact with the whistleblower. So now Nunes says that Atkinson, Inspector General Michael Atkinson, is under active investigation. I'm not going to go on any further than that, because you know obviously he has a chance to come in and prove his innocence. But my guess is Schiff, Atkinson, they don't want that transcript out because it's very, very damaging. And so that's a wrinkle. I hadn't heard anything about this. I think just a little smattering at one point, but that's something to watch for. Again, it's IG Michael Atkinson, and I had been told in the past that what he did in regard to this was very suspect, but I didn't know that he was under investigation. Now we both know that. All of us know that. So, this is another story that I wanted to bring to you. This is a complicated story, but Hunter Biden, of course, is the center. Joe Biden and Hunter are at the center of this Ukrainian situation. And Hunter Biden has, in this paternity case in Arkansas, oops, I'm going to have to say goodbye because the music came in late. All right, I'll tell you this tomorrow. Sandy Rios in the Morning, AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.